Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, it's Jessa. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. I am so glad that you are here with me. We're talking about something kind of difficult today. We're talking about miscarriage. And Jessica's here to share her personal story. And what really struck me in this conversation is how much she is here to share this because people don't talk about it. Because this is not, like she even says in the beginning, we don't even tell people we're pregnant often for the first trimester. So we don't have to tell them if we lose a pregnancy. There is this air of silence around these things that is not helpful to people. And there's a similar thing with sex. You know, people struggle with sex and don't talk about it. They don't hear their friends and family talking about it. Everybody thinks they're alone. They're the only ones with this going on. They don't have the support they need. This is so, so important. So Jessica's going to share her story of her journey through her miscarriage, some of the ways she came to realize there are options and choices that each person can take to navigate this in the way that is best for them, and to honor that process and that grieving that needs to happen. I hope you take a lot away from this interview. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Jessica, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Where do you want to start with this story? Do you want to sort of lay the context of your journey here to start with?
Yeah, I do. And you know, I have to say, coming into this conversation about our miscarriage, I've been really like, oh my gosh, why did I choose to tell this really intimate personal story to so many people I don't know? And a friend of mine who I posed that question to, she said, it's because you're brave. And so I just want to begin by acknowledging it really is taking a lot of courage to share this story. And I really want to normalize how hard this entire conversation is.
Yeah.
It's not easy for me. That's not why I'm telling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard, but because I feel it's important.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got pregnant and my husband and I got married the previous year and we're both in our 40s and really didn't think we might ever find a person we would have a family with, but lo and behold, we did. So for the first time in my life, as opposed to trying not to get pregnant, I started trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And had been doing some nutritional therapy and a number of things to support my chances as a woman in my 40s to get pregnant. And 3 months in, we conceived, which was just so exciting.
Yeah.
So first time being pregnant, and I work full time in private practice, and I was sick and I was sort of stretched very thin. And we decided, for looking back, reasons I can't really put my finger on, not to tell anyone that we were pregnant. Mm. And I realized there's this sort of lore, like in the air and water, that says, when you first get pregnant, don't tell people and wait until the first trimester, the third month has passed before you do.
Right, right. I mean, I assume you're referring to that thing we get about wait for 12 weeks, because then we know we're past, you know, the chance of miscarrying, or at least largely,
exactly.
Right? So don't tell anybody. We don't want to jinx it or have to tell them we've lost the pregnancy.
Bingo. And that's it. We don't want to have to get out loud about the truth of the fertility journey.
Yeah.
While so many people are miscarrying, so few of us are talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that planted the seed for it to be not an easy journey when we miscarried at almost 3 months.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't told most people.
Right. So, oh man. So you're going through this huge thing and nobody even knows you had a thing.
No one even knows I had a thing. While I was leading groups and, you know, handling my clients and being social, I told very few, even close friends, which looking back, I think, why? I'm so, you know, so much of my advocacy personally and professionally and spiritually is about seeking support. So that already was like a, wow, it's so interesting that programming, you know, really had its way with us. So we're seeing a midwife, and at 11 weeks, we had our second visit with her. And she said, I can't verify your pregnancy. She did the first physical exam. And she said, it's inconclusive, but she just wasn't able to say for sure that we were pregnant.
Okay.
And by that point, I didn't have any signs that there were any issues. I'd had some spotting, which anyone who's been pregnant knows that can be fairly common and not indicative of any problems.
Right, right.
But very interestingly, the day after our appointment with her, during which she told us she couldn't verify the pregnancy, I did begin to miscarry.
Mm.
So it's really interesting to me because it turns out it's very likely that the pregnancy ceased being viable at 7 weeks.
Oh, what makes you say that?
So, you know, this is going to get kind of specific. And, you know, I just sort of honor your listeners for taking in all of these details. But when we miscarry, especially if it's a little later in the pregnancy, mine was at what I thought was 11 weeks into a healthy pregnancy, we pass an embryo. We still pass a body part, a body.
Yeah.
If, you know, a very underdeveloped body. So the size of the embryo suggests that it was at 7 weeks that the life stopped developing.
Wow. All right.
It's called a missed miscarriage. And it's not that uncommon where the body still thinks it's pregnant. I was still sick. I was still seemingly feeling that full feeling in my belly. But in the end, it turns out it possibly 3 to 4 weeks prior, the life had stopped developing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the day after the midwife told us the pregnancy was potentially unviable that my body caught up.
Wow. Do you sort of see that as you got, I mean, not permission, but that something about that allowed your body to start to release it? Is that how you kind of conceive of what happened?
So. Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. It's really, there's so much mystery when it comes to birth, conception and birth. But that Friday evening, I began some mild cramping and bleeding, and which was different than spotting.
Right.
It was clearly, wow, this is a miscarriage. And I was very calm, and the cramps were mild throughout the night. So I was able to sleep. I'd wake up, I'd breathe through some discomfort, and I'd go back to sleep. What I didn't know, but I certainly learned the following morning, is that in some cases, not all, but in my case, it was certainly true, that a miscarriage includes a labor, can include a labor.
Yeah.
So I woke up about 7, got out of bed, and by the time I was upright, the contractions surged beyond really what I was capable of feeling, way beyond my pain tolerance. Mm. I was in an amount of pain that I had never been in before. And that was the place, of course, where we called the midwife and we called a friend who we've been consulting. And there's not much that people could say. I wasn't able to take ibuprofen because I didn't have food in my stomach. So my body felt the full totality of the experience. And I was very, very blessed. And the people who kind of tune into my work know this, that my husband was so, so there with me. I was not alone by any means.
Yeah.
I mean, we certainly were unprepared, but we were unprepared together.
Yeah.
So I ended up crawling into the bathtub, and the warm water at least kind of dulled the pain a little bit. And I had a labor and a delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself using my voice to move through the contraction. So I was wailing and I was really screaming. And my in-laws, who we have a duplex, so we share a building, you know, a house with them on the other side. I could only imagine, you know, I know they were very scared and praying for us. But I passed the embryo and my body released and the pain subsided. And, you know, we could hold it. And we could see it.
Mm.
And of course, we saved it so that we could bury it, which we did the next day. And we thought that was it. And it was super hard. And it was super scary. And I also was amazed by my body and amazed by my partnership with my husband that we could go through that. And I felt that we'd crossed over something. We had gotten pregnant. We lost the pregnancy and that we were going to get through. But really, the reason I called you and wanted to tell my story is that the journey kind of began there. It didn't end there.
Hmm.
what happened in the subsequent 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 weeks was a process of figuring out how to complete the miscarriage.
Okay. So yeah, tell me more.
What happened was, you know, it seemed like I was bleeding for a couple of days. I was bleeding for a week. The bleeding stopped about a week in, but then it started again.
Mm.
And we were in touch with our medical providers who were suggesting that I get an ultrasound just to see how much was left. And it turns out that there was, you know, a meaningful amount of what they call the kind of products of conception still in my womb.
And do you know anything about how common that is, that the miscarriage is not sort of complete?
Gosh, that's a really, really good question. I know how common miscarriage is. I'm pretty sure it's very, very common that a woman will have the option to have additional intervention if she chooses because it's not complete. I don't have statistics,
okay,
but it's
right. But it's not like it's rare, right? Like often there's some sort of procedure offered to finish this up. Okay.
Yes, that's the word, to finish it up.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was at this crossroads where I was given options, and the people who gave me the options included my midwife and a gynecologist we talked with. And they said there were two. And one was misoprostol, which is just very fairly commonly used to finish, to help the body to release what's in the womb.
Right.
But there's also a DNC, which probably listeners are familiar with. That stands for dilation and curettage, which is the vacuuming or the scraping of the womb to complete it. And it happens when a woman is, you know, under anesthesia, and it's an outpatient procedure.
Right.
And neither of those options sounded good to me. You know, by that point, I'd already had a labor. And so the notion of taking a pharmaceutical that would catalyze my body to go through that again was just really scary, because it was really scary the first time. And the second option I didn't want, as it felt very aggressive to me. And I certainly know many women who did that, and I certainly support their choice. But in my case, I cringed and I said, I don't want that. But what was given to me were those two options.
I was just going to say, if you went another route, did you even know there was another route? Like you choose A or B, and it's like, I don't want either one. You're just sort of in the...
Yeah.
A pioneer here, like, I don't want either one of these things. What else is there?
Exactly. And bearing in mind, you know, even though I miscarried, I still very much had pregnancy hormones in my body. So I was emotionally very vulnerable. I mean, I only very recently completed the arc of those hormones in my body, and it's a very different experience to be on the other side of that. So I was feeling physiologically extremely vulnerable, and then psychologically very uncertain. Which is so undermining to that feeling of safety. I was feeling so unsafe with this question, because what I was told was having this material in my body risked infection. It was a medical risk to me. And of course, I didn't want to get sick or, you know, put myself in peril. And so we got the misoprostol. We fulfilled that prescription because I thought that was the lesser of the two kind of evils or compromises. But in the meantime, my husband, who was not physiologically in the same boat, right?
Right. He was not immersed in pregnancy hormones.
Right. And, you
know,
launched into doing research for us. And this was really a pivotal point. I was just telling him last night how grateful I was that he had the presence of mind to say, what else is there?
Mm.
And so we were searching for alternatives and natural remedies to a DNC and how to complete a miscarriage. And he found a homeopath in the Netherlands who offers homeopathic alternatives to a DNC.
Huh.
Like a million miles away, and someone we didn't meet. And it turns out she was on her own maternity leave, so we couldn't even contact her. But we watched this like 11-minute video, and she said, you can take these remedies and they can give your body the support it needs to safely complete the miscarriage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course I thought, well, we're not homeopaths. How do we administer this? But the impact of that video was that it took what felt like this shrunken set of options and it expanded them.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel so desperate and so stuck. And with his help, and after doing a lot of praying and meditating, we said, we're going to keep this pharmaceutical as a backup, and we're going to get these homeopathic remedies, the two, the kind of entry-level ones that she recommended. And I took the time off of work, and we sat and we waited. And so I was just checking my calendar. That was week three, almost week three after the miscarriage. And we went through the weekend and I passed more tissue and I didn't have cramps. And mind you, through all of this, my energy was really coming back. I wasn't bedridden. I was exercising. I had pretty much lost whatever additional weight I'd gained. I was really showing signs of a healthy body.
Right.
And then the following week, of course, we followed up with another ultrasound. And we showed again that I still had material in my womb, at which point I was at what felt like a struggle with my medical providers. One of them, who had read the ultrasound and saw that I still had products of conception there, said, "Your body's response is not normal. What you're doing is not working. And here's your options." And at that point, I said, "I'm going to step away from the people who are telling us what to do." And we continued to do what I've learned is called practice expectant management, where I hired a homeopath who I found in Seattle, God bless her, who ended up being an angel for us and held our hand while we let my body resolve the miscarriage. I didn't bleed anymore, but I continued to monitor my pregnancy hormone, which is called HCG. I continued to get lab tests. It continued to go down. And I've since had two periods. And my body is very, very healthy. We're 3 months past, almost 3 months past miscarriage, and we're ready to try conceiving again.
Hey, just a quick little break in the show because I have something to offer you. If you have ever sat with your partner and you kind of run out of things to talk about that are not, you know, work, the kids, money, logistics, who's doing what, what's happening this weekend, if you are looking for a deeper way to connect, have conversations that build intimacy, that build awareness, you know, of yourself and your partner, I have daily conversation starters for you. You'll get them via text message every day, and then the two of you can have a more interesting conversation than maybe what you've been doing. All you have to do is text me the word topics to 206-309-8645, or look in the show notes. There's a link there. But text me the word topics, and you will start getting those every day. Now back to the show. Have you done another ultrasound too to sort of verify that all the tissue is gone? Or at this point, it's like I'm trusting the process.
So I had two periods, which I believe were continuing to release whatever was there.
Yeah.
My menstrual cycles have been very different since I miscarried, which I understand for up to 6 months is very common. I haven't gotten an ultrasound. My HCG levels, see, you can't have I'm sure you know this, you can't have a period unless the pregnancy hormones are below 5.
Right, right. A certain
point. Yeah. A certain point. Yeah. And the threshold is 5 or 6. So I had all other indicators that this is complete.
Yeah.
And we're proceeding from there.
Yeah. So what, I mean, I don't know. I have several questions for you. What do you think it is that you accessed, your partner accessed, that allowed you to sort of make this choice for yourself? I'm curious what you want people to take away from this for themselves, because not everybody's going to make the same choice, but like what's sort of universal in your journey? What do you want people to know?
Yeah, that's two great questions. Well, so the first one, what did we access that allowed us to make that choice? I think it was on our side, frankly, that we are older. And, you know, it's definitely not a help for maximizing the chances of having a child. And we are in that journey now and doing our best. But in that, we are both in our 40s, both educated in our respective ways, and have both spent a long time as adults making natural choices around our health. We use a combination of Western medicine and then really our food and our lifestyle choices. So we have a long practice of making choices that are unique to us and empowering for us. And I think if we had not already had a practice of making choices that were different than mainstream medical choices, I doubt we would have been able to do that in the face of all of that vulnerability. So I think our maturity, our relative maturity, and then our history of a lifestyle that way helped us.
Yeah.
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 I don't prescribe in any way any particular choice for a family going through a miscarriage. I'm on many Facebook groups with mommies over 40 and also parents who lost a pregnancy or a child. I've sought out lots of support and I've heard lots and lots of stories of many, many different ways that people do this. And I have no judgment. It is such a hard choice. So the universal is not, oh, do it the way I did. But the universal is there are choices. And here's one person, and here's her journey and the choices she made and we made, because I certainly did it with my partner. I've spoken with many women who've heard my story, because I have gone public prior to this about our miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of interesting things that really caught my attention. And one was a lot of people who essentially said to me, I didn't know I had any other choice.
Yeah.
And then I spoke with a friend this weekend, and she said, oh, my doctor did tell me I could just let my body handle it, but I didn't have any examples of women who had done that. I didn't have role models.
Yeah, yeah.
So she went with the more mainstream medical options. Now, everyone has to do it in a way that feels in alignment for them. Pregnancy is so much about the mommy's body, especially saying, what's true for me?
Yeah.
But if we don't know, we have options. And given the immense number of factors that are working against us in terms of us having like a feeling of choice and power there, you know, it's like something's inside my body. You know, I chose to get pregnant, but it's like taken over. So, you know, given all of that, I think the takeaway that I wish for listeners to hear is that there is such a thing as options, and I took one.
Yeah, that's so important. I sort of want to ask you about the impact of this whole experience on your intimate relationship with your husband too. Anything you want to share about that? Like, you know, because I know that what I'll hear from clients a lot is once people are trying to get pregnant, that can change the nature of sex or connection. And then losing a pregnancy can be devastating, and then trying to get pregnant again. And I, you know, I don't know how much you feel like you might want to share about that, but I at least want to ask.
Oh, it's a wonderful question. I feel very blessed. We're not that far into our marriage, so we're really a newlywed couple. We just had a one-year anniversary shortly before getting pregnant. Actually, we were pregnant. We had a one-year anniversary shortly before losing the pregnancy. So we're a new couple.
Yeah.
And I would say it brought us so much closer. Mm. The first month after the miscarriage, I feel like we were just holding each other and shaking. And thank God, you know, we did, there was bickering, there was stress. It wasn't like, oh, okay, we just like somehow floated into harmony with this awful thing. But we kept coming back. It wasn't that we didn't trigger each other, but we kept coming back and remembering that we were on each other's team and we were going through this together, and we stayed slow.
Yeah.
I kept my workload as low as I could. We really were quiet in many ways. We didn't jump to the next thing, mostly because my body was still going through it.
Right, right.
So that's something that I just have this like question about, because the medical procedures on offer finish, quote unquote, the process. My curiosity is what happens to the grief arc. Such a major loss. And we were going through it in a very physical way, which helped us in a very emotional way prioritize it. Mm. And I, you know, I don't wish that challenge on anyone, but I do feel that there was something that got space, that needed space, that allowed us to kind of be very sober and kind of very real about the process. We weren't trying to ignore it. We couldn't. I was still bleeding.
Right. Right.
I was still seeing medical providers. And I think that was pivotal to our bonding.
It's interesting. It's almost like if we accelerate the miscarriage process, then maybe it short circuits your grief process, right? Like all of a sudden you're done physically, but where's that space and time to just sort of be in it?
That's my curiosity. I shared my miscarriage story with my community. And what I saw, it seemed, was a lot of people not only have a lot of empathy for us, and, you know, I certainly don't know, this is just a speculation, but it seemed to me that there was a surge of grief that was kind of sitting and hanging out. And a lot of people were feeling it through my miscarriage, potentially about their own losses.
Right.
It was actually a little overwhelming to me to see how much my friends and extended community was impacted. So much so that I ended up kind of releasing some information about, here's how you kind of come down from a big experience. Like, this is what I'm doing. Many of you may want to try this, because it seemed to me there was this surge of grief by the people who were closest to us, of grief potentially ungrieved.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I would say it's like we got we walked through fire together. I feel my husband and I walked through fire, and we are so much, I mean, there's like a kindness that we bring to each other, knowing how much we've gone through, and we are trying to conceive again, and it's exciting. And we're continuing to remind each other, we are so happy with who we are and what we have, so that we're lessening the pressure that we put on ourselves, because it's, you know, it's hard to keep going after that. So we're really doing the things so that we know that we have each other, whatever else happens.
It sounds like you are bringing that into your sexual intimacy in terms of, we are connecting with each other. We're connecting with what we have now. We are in this together, and not letting trying to get pregnant or having loss of pregnancy sort of overshadow too much.
Yes, that's a really good word. It could so easily, you know, it all happened in this body. I miscarried in this home. These are all reminders of this very hard experience. And yes, we are. I'm really proud to say we're in a new season. We're not living in the shadow of that thing, but we were deeply in it while we were.
Right.
A month into the experience, we took a week off of each other. I went to visit friends in Austin. I live up here in Washington, but I have dear friends where I used to live back in Texas. It was like 5 or 6 days to be by himself. And that was also helpful. It's like there was this like, oh, I miss you. You've been right at my side like every moment for a month. But it was also like we needed that little bit of, okay, breath and air, and not perpetual reminder, and that we could come back. And that was around Thanksgiving. And it was like Thanksgiving marked the kind of turning a page. Yeah.
Is there anything I have forgotten to ask you, or that you want to make a point to share with the listeners?
I'm a new mommy, and I count myself as having experienced motherhood. There's so many people who are, you know, my siblings, for example, their kids are in their 20s. You know, my peers are, many of them are parents. And so I want to say, as someone new to this journey, that I've learned, I think the hard way, how much we don't talk about the fertility process, the entirety of the process. You know, our commitment, God willing, that we get pregnant again, is to tell the people closest to us so that we can have support, whatever happens.
And
know that we can handle what comes when we're out loud about it. And I just want to underscore my hope that many of us get a little bit more out loud about what we're very quietly shouldering in this journey. Certainly not just in trying to conceive, but being parents, which, you know, it's like, I think, oh, as long as I just have a baby, everything will be easy. Ha ha. Right. Like, right. I'm under no illusion.
Yes.
But to foreground rather than background, you know, there is no exception to the trend that everyone I told I miscarried said either I did too, or my mother did too.
Yeah.
There was no exception. The how common this is blew me away relative to how I never heard the stories.
Yeah.
So I just want to underscore, you know, I'm wanting to be out loud because I want others to be more out loud so that we don't have to do this alone, and so that we don't feel that stress, and our bodies have the greater chance of sustaining other healthy bodies.
Yeah.
That's my hope.
Well, thank you so much. And I really appreciate and commend the courage you showed sharing this, the heart that you've got to want to bring this message to people and support other people. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much for supporting my story as well, Jess.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly Get to Know You and Question and Answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.